Welcome to the One Bottle of Wine podcast. I'm Anissa.
And I'm Emily.
And today is not going to be like our typical topics.
So in all honesty, Anissa and I went back and forth quite a bit on what a good topic would be for this month. And we just couldn't in good conscience do an episode on anything else except for talking about the mass shootings in both Uvalde, Texas and Buffalo, New York, as well as the thousands of other mass shootings that have happened in the last 10 years since Sandy Hook.
So we've tried very hard to keep politics out of the podcast, but to brush past these events and the other tragedies that this country has faced due to gun violence and just give your typical thoughts and prayers is literally part of the problem. We as a nation have done nothing concrete to prevent these tragedies in the last 10 years since Sandy Hook. So this episode, we will not talk about a fun topic to discuss over a bottle of wine, because in reality, this is what people will be talking about over their next bottle of wine.
Yeah, absolutely. And disclaimer that we are no experts. We are not claiming to know everything about gun laws, gun control, or gun violence, etc. And this episode is truly not meant to demonize anyone, create further divides, because that doesn't get us anywhere. Our entire system is broken, and our intention today is to bring attention to some facts and statistics about gun violence in our country that we feel are concerning.
So the one thing that's going to stay consistent in this episode is that we are drinking a bottle of wine, or at least I am. Emily is still pregnant, guys.
Still pregnant,
yeah. And she's going to be drinking water. But tonight, I'm not sure where I got this bottle of wine. I'm going to keep it pretty brief for you guys. It is called the Z. Alexander Brown Uncaged. It is a proprietary red blend from California. And Em, do you want to read the back of the bottle for me?
Yeah, it smells good. Honestly, you know, I'm not like, I don't have an aversion to the smell, which is good. So the back of the bottle says, "The owl is the guardian of the vine, and myths say it is present when the spirit is set free."
Okay. I'm going to take a little bit of a sip. I might pour the whole thing, honestly, to like match this topic that we're talking about today. Like you said, it does smell good. I pulled up the vino on this one. It has a 3.9 out of 5 rating.
That's pretty good.
It has over 511 ratings, so not like crazy amount of people have rated it. The average price is about $16. Again, I can't remember. I think it was a gift, like a housewarming present or something like that. All right, let me take a swig. Smells delicious.
This is definitely a time that I wish that I could have some wine. Mm-hmm. Just to help, you know, sleep.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is very bold.
Okay.
The initial taste is like, you know, when you keep it in your mouth for a second, it's like a whoa, shocker.
Interesting.
Goes down pretty smooth, though. Definitely similar to a lot of red blends.
The aftertaste is more smooth than the initial.
Yeah, I definitely taste like the oak vanilla. It's described as oak vanilla chocolate.
Can I smell it
again? I don't really smell the chocolate or taste the chocolate. I get more vanilla. It definitely has dark fruit smells too.
Yeah, I definitely smell more fruity than, I don't smell a lot of chocolate.
Yeah, I don't know where that description came from.
But I feel like I can smell how it would, that initial taste would be bold.
I think of all the fruits that I smell, like there's blackberry, I think a little bit. Black cherry sticks out to me.
Yeah.
It smells like, I love cherries.
I love cherries too.
And I think we're approaching cherry season, so I'm excited. I think saw some.
I don't even know when cherry season is.
I think it's like early or late summer. I'm not sure. Okay. But I did see some cherries at the grocery store the other day, so I'm going to assume that it's cherry season.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely a dark flavor. I think I'd recommend this with like maybe, you know, some steak for dinner.
Ooh, okay.
Or something like a hearty.
Yeah.
Because it will kind of blend well.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get into the episode, we do want to express our condolences to the victims of the tragedies that we'll be talking about and their families and friends, and to everyone who has been impacted by gun violence over the years. We know that our words are just words, and these are the words that everyone is so sick of hearing because we've been hearing them for so long. Mm-hmm. But we do want to encourage all of our listeners to donate to an organization or several organizations that are actively working to end gun violence across our nation. To name a few, there's Every Town for Gun Safety. There's the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions, as well as Giffords. Those are three of the major ones right now that are working to end gun violence.
I will touch on that too. I've seen a lot of, you know, social media outcry for it, which is really typical when things, especially in our modern day, when things are going, you know, sideways, you know, whether it was Black Lives Matter or, you know, hate against Asians or any of those things.
Yeah.
So it's really nice that people are posting about these organizations. Yeah. Some of the organizations, I'm going to be honest, I've never even heard of. I'm thankful I've never heard of, essentially, you know, because I haven't been exposed to it as much.
But now you do know.
So right. Now, I know, and it's easier.
But it's important that, you know, I feel like for people who feel really hopeless right now, which I think a lot of people do, just watching this kind of thing happen over and over again, to have some kind of outlet to feel like they're doing something that is making an impact, no matter how big or small it might be. I know for me, it's my small way of feeling like I'm doing something to help, though I know that it's minor in the grand scheme. It works for me. So
to give a little background on everything that's been going on, within a matter of 10 days, there have been two separate mass shootings that resulted in the deaths of 31 people, leaving another 21 people injured. So in total, you have 52 lives affected, not to mention everyone else in the country that has been going crazy and feeling very, very sad about that.
Yeah. So on May 14th of 2022, a mass shooting occurred in Buffalo, New York at a Tops Friendly Market store, which is a supermarket in the East Side neighborhood. 10 Black people were killed and 3 other people were injured.
And then 10 days later, on May 24th of 2022, an 18-year-old fatally shot 19 students and 2 teachers and wounded 17 others at Robb Elementary School, Uvalde, Texas. Earlier that day, that same gunman shot his grandmother in the face and severely wounded her.
Both of these shooters used semi-automatic weapons that were obtained and purchased legally and were then used to kill a mass of people in a matter of minutes. And we want to say that we are intentionally leaving out the names of the shooters in these cases. All too often, we feel like shooters get glorified, and that's just not what we're going to do. So you will not hear the names of the people who committed these crimes.
I don't think they deserve the airtime, if I'm being honest.
They truly, truly don't.
So I know that I've personally been really, really sad about everything that's going on. I haven't wanted to be on social media because of it. I think I've maybe only posted 1 or 2 things about this, just primarily because I can't get it off my mind. And, you know, I have a cousin that's a teacher in Texas, for example, and I think I was at the gym when I saw it on the news and remember just kind of thinking like, oh my God, where is it? Like how, you know, like what happened, in fear for her life and her students' lives. And, you know, my cousins have kids that are also in school. Like there was just a lot of thought that went through it. And it's not, you know, the first time that I felt this way. I feel like it's just happened so many times since I've been old enough to like recognize it that I'm tired of seeing it on the news. And, you know, you and I have talked about this in depth a little bit, but I kind of just want you to vocalize how you felt too.
Yeah. I mean, both of the events in the last 10 days are, you know, nothing short of tragedies for, you know, what we say, like over 50 people who were either killed or injured, and then not only them, but then their families and their friends and anyone else who's been
watching the news
or just impacted in their towns. You know, like a lot of these places or small towns. But it, you know, having a, seeing this happen in a grocery store, a place that all of us go, a place that you're supposed to feel safe, and then not only a grocery store, but then a school, and the fact that I feel like we're so desensitized to it at this point because it happens so much is just, it's a real problem. And the fact that teachers have to teach their students how to shelter in place, that they have to go through active shooter drills, like that's a burden that should never have been put on teachers. It just shouldn't exist. You know, kids are going to school with bulletproof backpacks. Like there's just some, the things that are happening are sad all around, whether you have a kid or not. And I've said to myself many times that I honestly feel lucky to have a kid that's not old enough that I have to explain this to her, or that I have to explain that why going to school may not be safe, or why, you know, their teacher has to do these drills and explain the evil that exists in this world. And, you know, I hate using the word evil, because the actions are evil, but the people are not always necessarily evil. A lot of times people are struggling terribly with a mental health issue.
But that, you know, I don't think that can be or should always be our excuse.
No.
Allowing it to get that bad.
Well, I think the point is that somebody who has severe mental health issues and wants to harm other people shouldn't have access to a weapon that gives them the ability to kill a bunch of people in a matter of minutes. I think that's really where I feel very strongly. Again, like I know, you know, I'm not anti-gun by any means. I don't personally understand how people who are capable of committing really, really terrible crimes are able to get weapons that allow them to carry out those plans in such an effective way that it ruins hundreds, thousands, you know, millions of lives every year.
Right.
So.
Agreed. So I'm glad you mentioned a lot of those points. It's a great segue for what we have in terms of facts.
I want to try to stick to facts as much as possible. I know there's a lot of personal opinions that come in here. And again, we are not trying to
sway anyone
of divides. We are not trying to, you know, put really, really personal feelings and thoughts out there. We wanted to try as best as we could to stick to the facts that we found that feel concerning to us. Do you want to start?
Yeah. So the first fact that we have is that according to an article written by the Washington Post, the U.S. has experienced 3,500 mass shootings since Sandy Hook in 2012. For those of you that don't know, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred on December 14th, 2012, a little over 10 years ago, in Newton, Connecticut, when the 20-year-old shooter killed 26 people. 20 of the victims were children between 6 and 7 years old, and 6 were adult staff members.
Yep. The second fact brings us to today, which is day 152 of the year 2022, and the country has already experienced 213 mass shootings so far. 213 attacks in 21 weeks. This averages to about 10 a week. The tally comes from the Gun Violence Archive, an independent data collection organization, and the group identifies a mass shooting as an incident in which 4 or more people are shot or killed, excluding the shooter.
Okay, so let's dissect those facts just a little bit. I'll start with the Sandy Hook ones. I remember that vividly. I think I had just finished or was in the finals week of my first semester of college.
Yeah.
And definitely, you know, being in college, being at school, hearing about that, like a whole pool of emotions is what I felt during that time. Connecticut is not that far from us. I mean, it is, you know, like an hour or two flight. But I was 20 at the time, or I was about to be 20. And not only did I think and feel for those kids, but I remember being like, I couldn't imagine at this state of my life, even like guns terrified me, but also wanting to just walk up and get a gun and then turn around at the same time and do that crime.
Yeah.
So like I remember feeling a lot of emotion during that specific time.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think we have to remember too, and this is something I've talked with several people about, is that you and I are very fortunate enough to live in a place where we don't feel like we need a gun for our own safety. And that's not the case for everybody.
Agreed.
So I do understand there are many people who feel like they need a gun for many reasons, whether it's safety or hunting or other non-malicious reasons for owning a gun. But yes, I mean, I think this was the one where, I mean, there were several before this, right? You think back to even Columbine, which was like the first really heavily publicized in the news school shooting. And it was teenagers that, you know, there's lots of speculation around whether they were bullied or whether they weren't, and they decided to take the
lives. And there's movies about that and stuff now.
Yeah, they decided to take the lives of their classmates for whatever reason that they did, and then they took their own lives as well. But, you know, you just think about how old we were and then how old the shooter was, and it's jarring to think that someone that was about our age at the time
was capable
of doing something like that and, you know, destroying families.
So even, you know, more shocking to me than I think maybe you, the fact that we are on day 152 and there's been more shootings, more mass shootings than there have been days in this year is insane. And I feel like that happens year in and year out. I asked you, you know, and I've asked a couple of people, I said, hey, you know, just out of curiosity, like, do you even know what the definition of mass shooting is? Just, it was my own personal knowledge. Obviously, I could pull up my computer and Google it or like look on my phone, but I just wanted to know if people knew, like, we say the word mass shooting all the time.
Yeah.
And I was really curious, like, is there a define, you know, when media puts this out there, are they using a specific definition that they assume that the masses know, right? So it's nice that the Gun Violence Archive was able to give a fact and then explain what mass shooting meant.
That was basically they used their own definition to come up with the tally, the number, which we found in our research for this episode today. We did find that there is a complete variety of definitions for mass shooting, because there are also definitions for things like mass killing or a spree killing, which doesn't necessarily mean guns.
Right.
And it is more focused on the number of deaths. So there are a variety of terms that are used, but we're specifically focusing on a mass shooting. So it doesn't necessarily have to mean death, but it means that
injuries,
more than four people, and at least for this definition, more than four or more people are shot or killed.
Excluding the shooter.
Not including the person who's doing the shooting. Yeah.
Yeah. Super important to keep in mind, because obviously, you know, for trial purposes and for propaganda and all of those things, people are going to create their own definitions.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think it's important to, like, as you are doing research and as you are looking through these types of things, like, knowing what you're reading and knowing what you're looking at. And so if you're reading something that says mass shooting, knowing what that definition actually means instead of taking it at face value.
According to an article from the Pew Research Center written by John Gramlich and a study done by the CDC in 2020, in 2020, the most recent year for which complete data is available, 45,222 people died from gun-related injuries in the United States. Nearly 8 in 10, which is 79%, of U.S. murders in 2020, 19,384 out of 24,576 involved a firearm.
Wow. So basically, almost 80% of all of the murders that happened in 2020 involved a gun.
Yeah.
Of some sort.
Wow.
That's a staggering
I don't have amount. Anything else to say besides wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And 45,000 people died from gun-related injuries. And I will say that a lot of the stuff I've been reading, right, like, when it comes to gun violence, it's not always necessarily this premeditated, you know, attack or a mass right. shooting or things like that when we talk about gun violence. Like, some of the times we talk about gun violence, it's accidents. I was listening to a story on the news the other day of these two teenagers were fighting over a shirt, and one of them knew his dad had a gun, ran inside, grabbed the gun as a means to threaten the kid he was fighting with, and he pulled the trigger, and instead of shooting the kid he was fighting with, he missed and ended up killing his 2-year-old niece. So this is, I mean, gun accidents happen all the time.
Intent to kill someone. He was, you know what I mean?
Right. I mean, in that scenario, sure. But I think it's important to note that, like,
she still counts as a statistic. That niece counts as the statistic.
Correct.
Where, yeah, like, I agree.
In this, it's not always a, you know, flat out a murder necessarily.
It's like, not necessarily.
There are a lot of gun accidents that happen too. And so just the you know, talk around gun safety as a whole too being an important thing, that, like, how do we increase gun safety measures for people who do own guns?
Right. So it's not that we're just touching on the two tragedies that happened in the last 10 days, but more so as a whole.
Yeah. Gun violence as a whole, gun safety as a whole.
Okay, and what else?
So we found a study on Wikipedia that was done by it's called the Small Arms Survey. It's done by an independent research. It was an independent research project completed at the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies. And the U.S. ranks number one by a very large margin for the estimated number of civilian firearms in possession per person in the world. And I'm going to tell you a little bit what I mean by that. So basically, the estimated number of civilian firearms per 100 people in the United States is 120.5, which means that per 100 people in our country, there are 120.5 guns. There are more guns in our country than people.
Wow.
This study was done in 2017, so the data is about 5 years old, but it is
looking I doubt at, it's changed.
Right, looking at some of the, like, it goes over, the population was about 326 million, and then the estimated number of firearms in civilian possession, so this is not counting military weapons, this is only counting civilian possession of firearms, was 393 million, so closer to 400 million of the number of civilian-owned firearms in the United States. To give a frame of reference, the next highest country on this list in terms of the estimated civilian firearms per 100 people is the Falkland Islands, which is in South America, and that is about half as many as are in the United States. So out of 100 people in the Falkland Islands, there are 62 firearms. So it gives you, I mean, a real look. Another wild thing that we saw here was out of the 393 million firearms in civilian possession, guess how many of those are registered?
How many?
1 million.
So a third.
Almost a quarter.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, wow. So just under or just over a quarter.
That is.
Of all of them are registered.
Insane. Can you also touch a little bit on the third country that's on this fact sheet? It's a little bit larger than the second. The Falkland Islands are quite a small population. And yeah,
that's very true. The Falkland Islands only have a population of about 3,000 people, or did in 2017. But the third country on this list, so ranking in number three, is Yemen, which is in Western Asia, and they have a population of about 28 million. And their number of estimated civilian firearms per 100 people is 52. So basically they have one firearm for about half their people. If they
one in every two households.
In every two people would have a firearm.
Right.
And they don't have any kind of registered versus unregistered. There is no regulations, or maybe the study just wasn't able to find that data. But the estimated number of firearms in civilian possession for them is 14 million. So 14 million out of 28 million of a population, whereas we are outnumbered by guns in this country. This is just, when we read this study and I was reading through this list, it was facts that I didn't even know. I didn't know this before we dug into it.
You never thought you had to look it up.
I never thought that I would need to know that. But that truly is, it's just a staggering statistic.
And I'm going to be very honest with you, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
It is terrifying for not only like the fact that it's a statistic, it wouldn't be as terrifying if all of those guns were registered and we knew who had access to them and we knew that they were being, taught how to properly use and maintain and control those guns. What's more terrifying is how many of them are registered.
Yeah. And I've seen a lot of stuff going around that's comparing this and that, and a lot of times it's not comparing apples to apples, right? But one of the best comparisons I think I've seen is you have to get a license to drive a car. You have to register your car in this country to your local government. You have to take tests to obtain a license. You have to, there's a lot of things. There are laws around driving. There are laws around traffic safety. It is a highly, highly regulated thing. And a car is not something, they do kill people, right? People get in car accidents all the time. There are tragic, tragic accidents that are related to cars. But a car isn't, its number one use is not a weapon. So the fact that something, that their number one use is a weapon, whether that weapon is being used for hunting or safety or whatever it may be used for, its number one use is as a weapon. And it is much easier to obtain all of those, to obtain a gun than it is to get a license and get a car. Is, to me, again, just something that, how is that possible? How are we allowing that to happen? Anyway, I wanted to close out that section just of the amount of guns that are in this country and the staggering amount that are also unregistered with a quote from Cassandra Crefassi, who's the deputy director of Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions. And she's quoted as saying, "If firearms everywhere made us safer, we would be the safest place in the world. We have more guns than people in this country, yet we are the only country that continues to experience exceptionally high rates of firearm homicide and fatal mass shootings occurring with regularity." So that's how I would like to end our facts.
First and foremost, I would like to say that you and Maggie did a really, really great job researching for this episode.
Shout out to Swags.
Thank you, Maggie. She stepped in when I wasn't able to do all of the heavy lifting. But truly, we want to reiterate the fact that this episode is not meant to do anything besides provide some facts around the recent tragedies that our country has faced. All we want to do is stop seeing innocent children and innocent people dying on a weekly basis. We love you guys. We want you all to stay safe. And hopefully, we'll be back to cheersing with you guys on a much lighter note with some really good wine and the content will be out of this world. Until then, we love you.
Love you. Stay safe.